Welcome to the Round 8 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Hope you had a good weekend.
Yep. I was pipped by you this week, mate, but it was about time you took a win again. So Geelong at least got up, and looking forward to a week of potentially double downgrading with rookies looking sparse in the upcoming future. So that's probably going to dominate today's conversation, the rookie talk, as well as looking at some forward upgrades. I hope you're looking forward to getting into some Supercoach talk yourself, Mark.
Yeah, I am, mate. Not a bad weekend. Supercoach is sort of my footy life this year with Essendon doing so poor. So my footy team this year is actually just my Supercoach team. On the weekend, I scored 21-35. I felt like I was sort of doing all right all weekend relative to other people. Missing out on Big Maxi Gorn probably hurt my score a little bit and my ability to go up in the rankings. And probably the other painful one was Callum Mills on the field. Barlow sort of having a down week and my forward line not really firing. But other than that, I seem to avoid most of the carnage. My bench played pretty well, and I guess except Lincoln McCarthy getting injured. But I held on to all the Bombers rookies in the end, and they had a great game with Mitch Brown now looking good and Matty D coming back to form a bit, and Tippin Watty also scoring pretty well. So 21-36, and things have returned to normal. Me beating you. How did you go?
I was close though. 21-19, so I'm keeping my chin up. And I think I'm reasonably happy considering my team, like, my PODs did fairly awfully. And I only dropped out like 500 spots to sit at 50-68 at the moment. So, yeah, I can't really complain. Toby Green scored 65, Dan Menzel 49, Brad Crouch 51, Barlow 67. It was basically all my PODs that were spluttering. And so all things considered, I'm pretty pleased that the team still pulled together a decent score. Crouch, even though he only scored 51, he kept Callum Mills off field. Menzel scored 49, but he probably kept McCarthy off the field, who scored 15. So even though they didn't do awful, the bench positions were equally poor. So thank you to our community for your questions on social media. As we do each week, we take our questions from facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter at supercoachcoach. Don't forget, on a Tuesday, post your questions to us there and we'll try and fit as many as we can into the show. As I just mentioned, we'll be mostly looking at rookies. Keys and Petrarca will dominate the conversation, and then we'll look into the forward line. We did talk about the back line last week, and we have talked about midfield upgrades as we've gone on. So I think it's about time we hit up the forwards, and we had quite a few questions regarding forward upgrades. So it looks like a few people are looking to upgrade there. Before we get into the actual core of the show, we will well do a quick group update. And we had the winner of the group ask us on a few different social media pipes whether or not we'll be plugging the group. So happy to announce that the group was topped by Ashley's team, Team NWO, with a massive 23-69. And with that, Ashley joins the top 250 club, which is very, very exceptional. So congratulations to you, Ashley.
Well done, mate.
And I think last week we'd mentioned we had two members in our Supercoach coach group in the top 20. Those two blokes actually fell out of the top 20 this week to 27th and 35th. That's Tim's Here I Go Again and Luke's Hacienda. So still doing well. But we had a dark horse come out of nowhere. Darren's I Already Did This had a absolutely massive score. I think 2,300 plus, and that propelled him into 18th. So we have a new group leader. Congratulations to you, Darren.
Well done.
Three in the top 50 is pretty impressive, and I'm only wishing that I was in... Even triple digits would be absolutely brilliant, let alone double digits. So a massive congratulations.
Maybe by the end of the year, mate, we might get there.
Yeah. Slow and steady. Don't forget, for those of you out there who are looking to sponsor the show or contribute to some of the running costs, you can head over to patreon.com/supercoachcoach to help us out there. So we'll get straight into the questions, mate. Might as well make this show snappy if we can. And we'll start off with the rookies. So we'll start off outs and then ins as we do each week. And the first one is an injured player that we want to talk about. And that's Adam. So Dan B. Ham on Twitter has asked about him. Do we bench him or do we upgrade him? So is it a broken finger, Mark, that he suffered?
You mean Marcus Adams?
Yes, Marcus Adams.
He has a fractured finger, I think, and they've said at least a week, potentially two, but he should be back on for the second week. So I would think that he would be back. And look, he's got an awesome average, but that's really buffeted by his early game where he scored 120. So since then, his scores have been less than awesome, under 80s, I think, for the last 4 weeks. So even though he has been really reliable in that time and still looked really good, like, I'm in no rush to upgrade him. If there was a really good downgrade up in defense this week, I might take it. Or if I didn't have priorities elsewhere, I think it's not a terrible week to move him on. He's worth a lot of money, but he's not a priority trade in my team. So I think I'll just keep him on the bench and hope Mitch Brown has another good week.
He's a definite keep for mine. Looks very reliable, and all it'll take is another 120 score to hopefully see his price rocket to hopefully 400k. So it's a hold for me as well. On to guys you're more likely to move on. The first one is Jacob Weidering. For anyone who hasn't yet moved him on and are looking for a trade-out target, he's obviously an easy trade-out target. But would you consider potentially keeping him if you already held him for 1 week, Mark?
Yeah, I think if I'd made the decision to keep him last week, then I would be very tempted just to keep him one more week. And if you're going to do that, you're really looking to keep him for probably another 5 or 6 weeks until he really rides out his high break even and gets his price back to a number that you're happy with. I think that he also has the potential to maybe hit the 400,000 mark at some point. And if you do keep him, you might be rewarded eventually. I guess the tricky situation is if you have someone like Laird and Adams already on your bench, then you can no longer keep Weidering. And I guess that was always the risk of keeping Weidering if you kept Laird last week as well, that just it would only take one more injury to put you in a lot of trouble or a really difficult situation. So in that situation, I'd get rid of Weidering before Adams, but I can understand keeping him.
Yep. I agree with that. The two blokes that are probably top of mind in terms of trade-outs this week are Callum Mills and Lincoln McCarthy. So Mills scored 36 and McCarthy scored 15. Now, McCarthy seems like a fairly obvious trade-out because he's injured his ankle. There's a good chance he won't play this week.
Listed as a test, actually. Apparently the recovery has been quite exceptional over the weekend, and he's it was on crutches after the game, but he's now feeling a lot better. So decent chance of playing this week and should definitely be back the week after if he does miss this week. I guess it's really just the 15 is now going to be in his price for a few movements. He already lost a little bit of money. He has a break-even of 101. A little bit like Weidering now. If you're planning on keeping him, you probably need to do it for another 5 or 6 weeks and hope he bounces back to the 300, 350 mark.
Yeah. If not for that 15, I'd hold him because I think he can, you know, quite comfortably get to 300k and potentially even more if he has another score like 96 against Brisbane, and Geelong are winning a few games, so it just takes him getting on the end of a few to drum his score up. But like you said, Mark, his 15 means that you're committing to hold him for quite some time, and so I would be leaning to trading him out still. Callum Mills, he scored 36, priced at 335,000, and his break even's 94. He probably hasn't hit the heights that we'd hoped for because we paid 200k for the bloke and he's only gone up really 120 or so. So thoughts on Mills, Mark?
It's a weird situation because I know that you benched him, but I was not keen to bench him at all against Essendon. I thought he would have had a huge game and really scored well in that, especially in that second half when the game really opened up. And I think he was doing okay before then for our teams. I mean, he went 71, 68, 56, then 84, 94, and 70. And so he was definitely progressing in the right way and pretty solid player to have on your midfield. And then this 36 has really thrown a spanner in the works. You would expect him to come good again and get back to that decent scoring. But again, with the low score, if you are going to keep him, you're sort of committing to him for a little while. So definitely on the chopping bench for me. I can understand maybe he's a bit sore, maybe he needs a rest this week, but I could definitely understand keeping him for some teams. I don't think you absolutely have to get rid of him this week, but he probably won't be in my team going into next week.
I guess the real question is, if you don't trade Mills or McCarthy out, like who else would you trade out? Would you instead prefer to trade out a Menadue type or a Hewitt type who are at about 220 to 230, haven't quite reached their full price? Full potential yet, but show low scoring potential. It's a very difficult call to be trading out an underpriced player instead. Even though yeah. Mills has that potential, he's at a relatively good price to cash in a rookie.
Yeah, I guess that they've kind of gone up about the same amount in value. Like Mills has gone up a bit over 100, but so is Hewitt.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the tricky thing for my team is that if I trade Mills and I'm downgrading him, say, to Keys, for example, then that actually puts one of those poorer rookie scores onto my field instead of Mills, who I do expect will do better in the future. And I think that that's quite a tricky spot for my team. So I might get more money from downgrading Mills, but it's exposing my team to lower scores potentially. So, look, I think that I'm still more inclined to trade out Mills in that situation, but it is something that I'm considering.
At this point in the season, you're also more likely to have some donuts on field to help you loophole and get around the reliance of having to choose a rookie on field at lockout, as we probably have had to over the first few rounds. So that might help alleviate that a little bit. And I know Josh Smith only scored a 49 on the weekend. He was on field for you, I believe, Mark, but he still had two really good first up scores, and he could turn things around with Brisbane this week. So I think, yeah, I'd agree with you and take the punt there, Mark. Looking at the in, Christian Petrarca is obviously the most obvious play. And last week I mentioned potentially trading him in a week early. So for anyone who already has Petrarca, you'd probably be looking at Keys a little bit closer, who we will talk about in a little bit. But just quick yes or no, I'm guessing it's yes. Petrarca must have, right?
He was the only rookie this year that I would have been willing to trade in unseen. So I would have actually traded him in before his first game. I mean, he's a number two draft pick and he's a year older. Like, he should play every week at least and get some development into him. I think that he was on about 13 late in that second quarter, so his score might have been a bit inflated by Melbourne's huge second half, but yes, absolutely yes. Must trade.
Okay, so the real question is, I think for the week, if you're trading in Petrarca, would you also consider trading in Ben Keys this week, who, for a little bit of context, he probably picked in the lower range of his predicted order, and so a lot of people see a lot of potential upside in him. He's also racks up a lot of the ball as a junior. I think so, averaged something like 27 disposals a game, so there's good scoring potential there. He's only scored 59 in 64 so far, and I guess that's where the question marks pop up, because if you'd asked this pre-season whether or not you'd pick up Keys in round 7 during a downgrade season, I think it would be a resounding yes from both of us. But sitting where we are now, there's a little bit more question marks on him. Would you think about a double down this week, especially looking forward to the future, where perhaps the rookie depth isn't quite as strong as has been in recent weeks? We have McPherson from Gold Coast, Mason Redmond, Benjamin Crocker, Caden Brand. These are quite fringe players, not necessarily names that we've known about.
Sure. Look, I think that the standard moves this week are probably going to be McCarthy and Mills to Petrarca and Keys, and that's something that I'll probably more than likely do. I may deviate from that. I think there's a couple of things that worry me about Keys. One, that he wasn't picked from the start, and that Lepich thought that Matheson was ahead of Keys. Keys went into the NEAFL and absolutely dominated. He has a very good record as a midfielder for scoring Supercoach points. He came into the AFL team to play as a small forward, and he came in for, my understanding was that he came in for Josh Green, who got injured. Now, Josh Green's listed as a test this week. They dropped Lewis Taylor last week, who could also come in and play a similar role as a pressure forward. So from those perspectives, there's some doubts on his job security. And Matheson has played a couple of games in the NEAFL now, so he might be in a position to come in. So he's not playing his best role, so he's not playing as a midfielder. And his job security, there's got to be some concerns around it. Now, it's probably a weird way of looking at it, but just the look in his eyes watching on the weekend to me says that he is a very, very determined and competitive young man. And he was really steely, like, I'm going to grab this opportunity. And the fact that over his two games, he's had 8 tackles in his first game and 6 tackles in his second game means that he's fulfilling his role. He had 4 shots at goal on the weekend. If he had have kicked a couple of those, his score would have been a lot better off. He probably would have been a must-have this week. He didn't get those scores. I'm probably leaning towards him being the best of the bunch coming up. Now, he might not work out. I'm not totally sold on his scoring ability because he's playing as a small forward, but I do think that there's something there about him that says he's going to just make them keep picking him.
For me, the biggest worry is the upcoming rookies. I think it's really light, and so even though I'm not as sold on Keys, even though there are positive signs to look forward to. I still think it's the best of a unfortunate situation. You need to be downgrading during this upgrade period. An upgrade must come with a downgrade. You need to get some cash from somewhere. And last week I did an upgrade and a downgrade with the view to do a double down this week. And I think I'm going to go ahead with that because it doesn't really look like there's any standout first gamers that played on the weekend.
I do think that McPherson looked pretty good for the Suns, and given their injury list, he might be given a decent run at it. And I think that Hawthorn did get a bit from Caden Brand on the weekend in for Frawley, and they may go for that extra tall in the defense because he is a pretty good runner and he's a mature age player, and he looked awesome in the NAB and scored a right on the weekend. So whether it is purely like for like and Frawley comes in and he goes out, or whether the Hawks do look for something to change the momentum of their season and get someone young in to help them do that, which is a possibility. So it does concern me a little bit that I might actually want McPherson and Brand next week. Now, I'm not totally against double down 2 weeks in a row if that's what's going to take. Obviously, I'd try very hard to avoid that, but I am really focused on getting the best rookies into my team this year, and if they present, I'm going to take them when they do. Trengrove may be coming through as well.
Oh, Jack Trengrove.
At some point for the Demons, yeah, you'd think that they're going to give him a lot of time in the VFL to get his body right, but at some point they're going to play him and you'd think he'd do all right when they do.
Is he rookie price now?
155, man, or 159.
Wow, okay, all right. So that is tempting on the line. So I don't think Keys is a must-have, and we did get that question from a few people, including Brent Duran. He isn't a must-have, but I think he presents strong enough a case that if you were not confident about the upcoming rookies, or you didn't like Brand or McPherson as much as Mark does, then you'd strongly consider doing a double down this week. Yeah. Having said that, a lot of that depends on whether or not you did a double down last week as well. If you did a double down last week, you already have a lot of cash in bank, then all of a sudden your assessment on Keys does affect your decision on whether or not to double downgrade a fair bit. If you don't like Keys, then arguably you shouldn't hold that much money in bank, and you should probably do one upgrade this week.
I think if I had a bunch of money in the bank, I'd be quite reluctant to double down this week, and I'd want to get that money on the field. It's just too easy to get stalled if you don't bring it onto the field as soon as possible, because other issues can come up. Like Rocky got injured on the weekend. If you still had him, like, that stops your ability to actually use that money. So I think I'd probably skip Keys if I had a bunch of money and I doubled down last week.
Good call, mate. So let's talk about a few other rookies that probably aren't as likely to get a look in this week, but we'll cover them nonetheless because they are on the bubble. James Polkinghorne from Essendon is listed in the midfield, 52-35, his first two scores. Jason Castagna, 117K, 37-36, available in the backline. We talked about perhaps being light on backline rookies. And Kian Lavelle, who we probably will talk about the most out of the three. You'd mentioned him last week, Mark, but he was actually an out and then a late in back into the side over the weekend. He ended up scoring 62. Either these three blokes a possibility at all?
I was expecting a bit more from Polkinghorne. Maybe he needs to build some form. I think with Simpkin and Stokes both out with hamstring injuries, he may be given a little bit of time to do that. But the Essendon do have a few players in the reserves pushing up that might steal his spot. Lovell looked all right. I think he got better as the game went on. The fact he was a lay-in for Sam Mitchell probably concerns me a little bit about his ability to hold his position in that team. So probably a no for me on Lovell, although I could see him potentially working out. And a definite no on Castagna. Look, he might get better, but he's looked awful in his first two games. Just looked like he's just not ready to play at the pace that AFL standard happens at. I would definitely not be bringing.
All right, let's look at some outs and ins, and we'll get off the rookies now, Mark. Well, the first question here is from Jordan Donaldson. Do you still like Kolodziejczyk, or should we finally trade the bloke? So last week we said, just hold on. At least he's still scoring in the 70s, and then he goes out and pumps a 51. I saw him pop up on my news feed on Facebook because Rocket Eid was just absolutely cracking it, and the reason for that was KK kicking out in the back line directly to the opposition and turning over the ball, which led to a goal in 10 seconds after that turnover. Thoughts on KK, Mark? What's going on with the bloke?
Don't actually know, man. I think it is like a symptom of Gold Coast going down as well. Look, if I had him, I would be keeping him like I would with all premiums in that spot, and I would be using as a late upgrade. I just think you're always better off fixing the rookie because the premium that's not doing well is still probably scoring you more points.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely has not been showing much form in the last month, and it would be quite a concern if you had him in your team. I guess he's young and you just hope he becomes better. You can't hope for much more than that. A bit like last week, like I said, if it's any consolation, Julio only scored another 50-odd.
Did he really? He did. Wow, his price must be absolutely...
It's about 450 at the moment.
Wow, okay. So the other bloke that we want to talk about is, believe it or not, had an even worse run than these two blokes. And he scored his season low after looking like he couldn't get any worse. And that's Tom McDonald. He scored 43 on the weekend. And he's already scored a 55 and a 58 so far this season. He's dropped a total of 133,000 from his starting price point. He's currently priced at 384,000. That's absolute peanuts. His break even's still 128. So if you were considering potentially bringing him in, definitely still wait another week. But for those people who have him, like, would you be at the point where you're just like, stuff this, I'm out, let's trade this bloke out?
I think that you had some really good advice last week, like trading injured players around the upgrade season. You'd be more likely to keep them because if you are trading them, then it stops you in your upgrade process. And I think that that's what you should be thinking about with a Cole Jasny or a Tom McDonald in your team, that if you're trading those guys instead of a rookie, you're actually stalling your upgrades because you're sort of upgrading to someone that's already should be a premium and has the potential to probably score a lot better than what they are. With that said, I mean, it sucks to be keeping him now, and it sucks to have him in your team scoring so poorly. Last year, he had some really down games, but he also complemented that with some huge games. I don't know where those huge games are. Melbourne are doing a lot better, but his scoring is just not there.
Overall, I'd agree with you, though. Obviously, fairly genius advice that you lifted for me last week, so good work, mate. All right, let's move on to some forward upgrades now and some potentially more uplifting talk where we talk about high potential and big scores and big goals. So the first question that we have here is from at Jam Hawkins or James Hawkins. Your early season advice was to wait for Zorgo to fall in price, but it looks like he's on fire. Should we wait for him still to fall or just bite the bullet and get on? So he's not scored below 100 all season. He scored 110 plus in 5 of his 6 games so far, and that includes one massive 148. So he ain't cheap at 560,000, but it looks like his consistency might be worth the cash at the moment.
Yeah, at 560, I actually really strongly considered bringing him in last week, and if I was doing a forward upgrade, I probably would have. So from that perspective, I think that, yeah, he's an awesome pick, especially now with Rocky injured again and just showing like he might not get on the park as a regular basis and being able to play as a midfielder. I think that Zorko's form has been absolutely outstanding. And the interesting thing against Port Adelaide on the weekend, after halftime, he was actually tagged. They put Ebert onto him because he was just completely tearing the game apart. And so, I mean, he's kicking goals. He's got heaps of inside 50s. He's winning contested ball. He looks awesome. It wouldn't surprise me to see a down game here or there, and probably don't totally think he can keep up 112 sort of average. But 560 still seems a reasonable price to play for a dual position player with his upside.
I think the thing that impresses me most about Zorko is actually his personality. Like, he has captained the side before. Like he wasn't drafted being super highly rated. He came from a rookie. Remember when we first picked him, Mark, in that season where he was just exceptional value and he burst onto the scene. Like, the bloke just applies himself so consistently and meticulously. Like, I really respect the way he goes about it. It doesn't really matter how Brisbane are doing. He will lead the way with his effort and application, and he is a really good runner, and this isn't a fluke. Like, we've seen this in the past from Zorko time and time again, and hopefully 116, like, while it's probably a little bit inflated, isn't too far off what his true average will be for the season. And so, yeah, I do like him as a pick. If you have the money to spend on him, I'd have him in a similar category to Dalhouse at the moment. And Dalhouse is similarly brilliant. We didn't get any questions about him, but if anyone's looking to splash some cash, he's at 570, but he's averaging 110 the last 5 games, 100 plus, in like high score 150, kicks goals,
consistent.
Yeah, and they're small blokes, which is surprising, but the small blokes just seem to be getting it done, not only in terms of disposal, but actually getting on the board as well, it seems, with the fast transition play. Potentially these small blokes who can run forward of the play get a bit more opportunity in the current game as well.
Yep.
Next question that we have here is from Escrada, and she's asking about best long-term option this week for forward bargain upgrade. So the three blokes that he's highlighted are Westhoff, who we've mentioned before. He's priced at 405,000. There's Buddy at 500,000, and Martin, who officially bottomed out last week, considering he ended up with a 115, but he's still cheap now, 514,000. You must have been happy about his 115 mark.
Well, he was on 75 plus at halftime, so probably hoping for a bit more than that at one stage.
Yep. That's classic Martin that we've come to know now, though, isn't it?
Yeah, really. Especially with Cochin not there. Like, he looked like, yep, he's grabbing this game, and like he should, and going to play those midfield minutes. But then they put, I think, Liam Shields onto him at halftime and really shut him down.
I mean, you'd think that if Richmond were winning more games, he'd easily be in, you know, that Dalhouse, Zorko type category. But he, unfortunately, does wait for the outside ball a fair bit. Like, he's good in the contest, but that's not his prerogative. It's not to go in and win that hard ball. It's to wait for the outside ball, do a fend off if he has to, but then it's to use his silky skills or to kick a goal. And when Richmond don't win the ball as much, that unfortunately affects his output. But you know, hopefully Richmond shouldn't end up with only 4 wins for the season, which on their current ratio, that's what they're trended for. And so based off that, you'd think he'd have to improve off his current 100 average, and he seems to me like the prime target this week because his break even's now 64 mark.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and just great durability as well. And he can be frustrating at times, but has those big games in him. Seems a super safe, reliable pick, and I don't think he's going to get to that 110 average that maybe some people that picked him at the start were hoping that he might break out to at one point this year. But he should average a solid 100 to 105 for the rest of the year.
Buddy's one that's actually really surprised in terms of consistency, and I think if you thought that Buddy'd be averaging 100 with a low score of 83 to start the season, he'd be fairly high in consideration, because we still haven't seen that massive upside from Buddy yet. We haven't seen the 150, 160 game to really spike up his average. Thoughts on him, Mark? He's still at a relatively good price considering his consistency for the season.
Yeah, it was interesting to see in the paper, I think it was today or yesterday, the Sydney boys talking up his chances of kicking 100 goals. And you could see that on the weekend, that early in the game, Buddy gave a hand pass to Tippett in the goal square. But later in the game, once the game was iced, you could see that Buddy was taking a few shots that he wouldn't normally take. And that can only bode well for his scoring. Super consistent, kicking a heap of goals, looks really fit, really focused. My thing with Buddy is that if I'm going to pick him, I always really like to start him rather than trade him in, just because it seems so likely that he's going to miss a game or two at some point. He always seems to miss at least 2 games over the course of the year, so this might be the year that it doesn't happen, but I mean, he's not blowing it out of the water so far, so look, I think he's probably a reasonable pick, and he's always fun to barrack for in awesome form. Not someone I'm really strongly considering, though.
For me, Buddy at 400K, it's always a proposition that I find myself saying yes to. I can't help being sucked into the upside, but at his current price point, yeah, I agree with you. The injury history has to come into play, considering that he's a key position forward. So his average looks closer to 95 to 100 than it does 100 to 105 or perhaps 110, even though he's done it in the past. And so once you factor in the injury concerns and perhaps missing 2 or 3 games there, that could push his average down to perhaps a 90. Yeah, I'd be tentative on him at 500,000. That could be a wrong call. Like, Buddy could burn you by scoring 170 in a game and burn the advice that I gave off. But I think I would probably pass on him at the moment.
I think if he actually plays 22 games for the year, he'll probably be quite an important player to have in your team.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't shown an ability to do that in the past, though.
Yep. We like playing the odds, don't we, Mark?
Unfortunately, we do.
Mm-hmm. Westhoff is the last one that we haven't covered. 24 he scored in round 2, then 85-99, and that was supposed to be his bottoming out. Then he went and scored 28 in round 5. And so the 88 and 121 that he scored in the last 2 rounds has still seen him drop in price. He's currently priced at 405,000. Would you consider him?
Yeah, I probably would, actually, because if you look at his 2 low games, he doesn't have any hit outs in those games. So maybe that indicates that he wasn't playing as much on the ball. Whereas in each of his better games, he's only had 3, 4, 5 hitouts, but it's still enough to indicate that he's actually getting a lot more game time on the ball. And with Lobe out and with Port deciding to go with a Trengrove as their number one ruck instead of Dougal Howard, which we talked about last week on the show, and probably wanting Dixon to be as much of a stay-home forward as possible, really, with Schultz out and Ryder not there, then I think that he probably is a pretty good pick. And he showed over the back half of last year that he can average really well. The fact that you'd be bringing in a player into your team that has 2 scores in the 20s without being injured this year is effing crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And so it's really hard to actually recommend that. But at 400,000, he could average 95 easily for the rest of the year and turn out to be quite a solid pick. I doubt he's going to be like a huge must-have pick, but if you can get an upgrade that cheap, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So the other reason to think about him, he's in 1,500 teams. That's a very, very great POD for the price that you're paying and for the scoring potential that he shows. And I think I like what you brought up with Lobby being out and the potential for him to spend a little bit more time potentially on ball as well. So those all seem like good signs for Westhoff. Another bargain Port Adelaide forward is Chad Wingard. And we got a question about him from Jib Rangers on Twitter. He's at 396,000 and from starting off the season with 125 and looking like a brilliant pick. He's missed round 3, round 6, and hasn't scored above 76 has been his highest score since round 1. Having said that, though, we know his upside. He was All-Australian last year. Would you consider him? Having said that, his break-even is 124, so you could potentially hold off a week.
It was actually someone that I did seriously consider in the preseason, so I'm really glad I didn't go down that path. Because that's season ruining, really.
Yeah.
His back end of last year, from about this time, like round 7 last year, he went on a really, really good run where he posted 100, 2 out of every 3 weeks, which was really solid. I think he kicked like at least 2 goals in every game from round 5 onwards. So if Port can come good, and they've shown some signs, like the last 2 weeks they've actually had pretty big wins, and that's a bit of redemption, you think, for them. One was on the road, I know it was in against the Tigers, but maybe there is some chance that they're actually going to come good, and I would have Westhoff ahead of him personally. You'd want to see a score or two. I know that you like picking him at the bottom price, but you'd actually want to see like 2 good scores in a row before I think you jumped on someone like Wingard.
Yeah. We've got one more question here from @Danny_14, and this guy actually, despite what I said about Martin, he potentially tempts me more than him this week, and that's Lee Montagna. Like, he's averaging 104, but he plays midfield, and I've seen his upside in the past. Like, this bloke could average 110. Granted, he plays for Saints right now, and they're not the flashiest team in the comp, but he scored 130 over the weekend, and 82 and 70 were his 2 scores prior to that 130, so he still did drop 21K. He's priced at 534,000 now, and he's in only 12,500 teams, which, considering his pedigree, is a fairly good, unique player.
Yeah, because he did start off so expensive at the start of the season. I think, look, my concern with Montagna, and probably Boyd, who I did bring in last week, has always been the injury potential with them, just because they're getting older. And Montagna did miss last year, I think he missed 5 games with a knee injury thing. When he scored the 70, he picked up, I think that St Kilda described it as a light hamstring or a twinge in his hamstring, and he was in doubt for the following week, and then backed up his low score with another sort of 70, which, not awesome, but he's got 4 other scores over 100, including a 130 and a 150 already, so his ability to go really big can make up for those sort of games. And look, if he can stay on the park, I think he is an awesome pick this year, because he's not the number one tag player at St Kilda anymore for teams that even are running tags. And yeah, St Kilda seem to be playing pretty decent footy. He's an absolute class player with the potential to average, I think, what, 110 last year? So, yeah, at his price, I think he's a really good pick this week.
And his break-even is 118, so it isn't crucial if you wanted to double down. They are playing West Coast at Domain Stadium, so there's potential for him to have a down game as well. So you can wait a week on Montagna, but definitely it's the right time to be considering him. 534,000, he's dropped from his starting price point, and yeah, attractive. Rewalt, though, he's actually quite an expensive price point, $562,000, but after scores of 125, 137, and 142, everyone's forgot about the 33 he started the season on. And fair enough too, because despite that 33, he's still averaging 104 for the season. He's dominated outside of that game. Would you consider Rewalt, Mark? As talk of him playing on now, he's in that good a nick.
Yeah, and at the start of the season, I actually went back and looked at Richo's season when he almost won the Brownlow that year, because expecting Nick to play a similar role to that this year. And Richo only sort of averaged that 95 to 100 mark in that year. I was expecting it to be a little bit higher. And given the fact that I'd probably only expect Nick to average around the 100 mark at his current price, given the fact that he's older and he's going to have those injury concerns where he always seems to have a game where he gets knocked out or he hurts his knee in the first quarter or he has one of those really, really low games, that would just be enough for me to just hold off on Nick Rewalt and takes one of the younger guys. I mean, his form at the moment is fantastic. I don't think he's going to average 110 for the year, though.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a trap pick. And if you put Nick Rewalt next to Montagne, to me, it doesn't even seem like a choice. I'd pick Montagne every day of the week in that situation. Yeah. So I agree with you 100% there, Mark. Tommy Lynch is another key position forward that you've talked about in the past, and he's dropped a little bit in price now. He's at 484,000 after scores of 71 and 69 in rounds 5 and 6. Of course, this is off the back of Gold Coast dropping off a bit, but he still manages his 4 goals even in losses. Like, he scored 122 despite being smashed by Melbourne, who kicked 160 on them. He's in under 5,000 teams, so he's very, very unique player and looks like one of the best forwards in the game right now.
Yeah, absolutely love Tommy Lynch. I've got him in my draft team. My concern would be that there's some other really, really top-end talent around at a reasonable price in the forward line this week. I think he's probably a pretty good pick, very, very unique, but I think there's just a few others that I have ahead of him, like the Buddies, the Martins, Montagnes, even Westhoff, maybe, just because of his price.
Hmm. One bloke that I just want to mention quickly, we won't actually spend time on him because we've talked about him quite a bit so far this season, but just to let everyone know that Zach Merritt, his lowest score is a 53 that came in round 5, and that's officially cycled out of his price movements now. His next lowest is 90, next lowest after that, 99. He's had a 131 and a 123. Like, he's in really good nick, and this could be a good time to pick him up at 477,000. Zaka seems to be keeping his scoring up. Merritt does too. And even a player like Kelly, James Kelly, seems to be keeping it up. So don't think that just because they're losing a lot that their average has to drop off. He definitely still looks like a fairly decent selection and potential value selection this week as well.
Another good pick. All this talks, mate, it's making me want to upgrade in my forward line. I was going to pick these two rookies, but all these players sound awesome.
Yeah, yeah. The forward line is definitely stacked this year, and I think it'd be interesting to do a top six from the both of us, Mark, because I'd really struggle to pick it right now.
And then we've got players in our team like Kerridge and Wells that might not need trading out, or at least not for a while. So mm-hmm. How many forwards can you possibly have in your team?
That's a good point, Mark. The last four that I do want to talk about is Stevie Motlop, though, and he did have a 155 on the weekend, so it's apt that we talk about him. After a slow start to the season, started poorly, not just in the NAB games, but also in the preseason for Geelong itself. There's talk about him coming back a little bit overweight or whatever. Scored 51 in round 1, and since then has continued to move upwards in terms of performance on field. He's currently averaging 101. His break-even's now 23. To be honest, Mark, you've been a little bit more of a fan of Motlop's super coach prospects than I have been in the past. I've been fairly tentative of his up-and-down nature. What are your thoughts on him? Do you see him potentially keeping this up?
It's a shame that he had such a poor NAB, because I probably would have actually started him. I was pretty keen on him this year. The fact that he came second in Geelong's best and fairest last year, Geelong's draw opening up this year, he's a gun player, and he had a down year last year compared to where he was a couple of years ago. So look, I thought he was probably primed for a huge year this year, and probably over the last 2 weeks especially, but even the last 6 weeks has shown that he could have a really, really good supercoach season. I guess my concern for even my team, having Dangerfield and Bartel, I know Geelong have got a really good draw, but I really am careful not to put too many Cats players into my team, even though they score very, very, very well when they have a good win down at the Cattery. And I know you've got Selwood and Menzel as well. So I think that if you've got that many Cats, it'll probably cancel it out. And yeah, I'm just a bit wary about going too many from one team.
Yeah, you tend to notice it when they get into losses. All of a sudden, your team just craps out for the weeks. Overall, though, if you're not too reliant on your existing Geelong players, then he definitely looks like this could be a sort of a breakout year for him. He's struggled in the past to transform his scoring impact into super coach scoring. I think he just struggled with weight of numbers in terms of hitting a level of consistency, whereas this year it seems to be a little bit better for him in terms of consistency. Apart from the 51, his next two lowest scores are 80 and 81, which if you'd told me that that'd be Motlop's score trend for the year, I wouldn't really have believed that. So if anyone's looking for a POD, he certainly seems decent as well. It sounds like anyone looking for a forward line upgrade, Mark, I don't know how much help we
just pick all of them. They're all awesome.
Why don't we do a top three from the blokes that we've talked about tonight?
All right.
Can I put you on the spot?
Sure. So I agree with your assessment on Montagna about this week not being absolutely essential because he's playing West Coast over there. I would say the same about Zach Merritt because they played the Kangaroos this week, but both of them would probably be in my top two or top three anyway. And my next player would be probably a line ball between Buddy and Westhoff. Buddy probably going to score better, but Westhoff, like if you can get a proper upgrade for 405,000, then that's a huge bargain that could really make a difference for your season.
Mm. For me, as a non-Martin owner, I guess my eyes are particularly drawn to him.
Oh, I should have probably had Martin in the top two as well. Mm-hmm. So can I have four?
Yeah.
That's actually five.
I don't know how much this is.
I think Sorko is probably a pretty good player as well.
I love it. If I was going purely on scoring potential, I would have Martin, Zorko, and Dalhouse as my top three for the week. Like you said, Mark Montagna, you could potentially fit in or you could wait a week on him. If I was going on value, then I'd have Westhoff as the player that I'd be looking towards. So hopefully that's some sort of help. The good part is you're picking between a whole bunch of good options. So hopefully they should all work out rather than you're picking a whole bunch of bad options, which tends to be the case when we're looking in the back line. Anyway, that wraps up this week. Show, Mark. Anything to leave our listeners with?
Hopefully it's a good week for the leagues and hopefully someone punches Maxi Gorn in the guts and struggles a little bit after that.
Yeah, the two of us are praying for it.
As a non-Gorn owner, in fact, he's gone massive 3 out of 5 weeks. He's been really tricky to watch.
Hmm.
Especially seeing as Nick Nat's been actually doing really well.
Yeah. The one guy we need to turn around for is bloody Toddy Goldstein. I mean, that 49... Whew, he dropped 45,000 last week. He's dropped 100K from his starting price point. His break even still 202. Not happy, Jan.
Yeah, I guess the consolation is that not many people are going to be looking to be trading in the rucks unless there's an injury.
Yep. They got Essendon this week, so there's a decent chance for some points there. So.
3 points.
We'll see how we go. All right, mate. All the best for your scores this week. I'm hoping that both of us smash out a big one because let's move up the ladder, mate. Let's get some of these leagues back into the top 20 and let's celebrate some league wins, eh?
Yeah, let's do it. And I guess all our listeners were pretty relieved that there were no Cox jokes this week.
All right. See you, mate. I'll catch you again next week. Cheers.